Hey Mick, how's it going?
Good heart, how are you?
Not too bad.
CSC meeting yesterday was rather interesting.
Yeah.
I think those were very contentful discussions.
Yeah.
And sort of, it gets to the heart of kind of what we're about, I think. So,
Well,
and also about why it's hard to do it.
we've talked about the, and these are the same points we've been kind of beating to death forever. The cross project point and the sub project point.
Right.
I think we've spent more time arguing about those than anything else.
Well,
So.
it represents both the promise and the challenge.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's
Know, the ideal situation is we figure out how to morph all of these things together, and yet I think there's also we were talking a little bit about the challenges. Dan and I were talking about the challenges of, or sorry, Kelly and I were talking about the challenges of doing the Explorer stuff. And if you're a developer and you have option A is to go in and work with the Blockchain Explorer, which is focused principally on Fabric,
Right.
and work to generalize that and incorporate what you need for Sawtooth in, and end up with something which is sort of a loose bastardization of both, or for about the same amount of work, get something that's completely custom for Sawtooth. Which would you
Yeah.
choose as a developer?
Well, obviously.
And yeah, I mean that, and that's kind of the problem that we're at right now, is that
Yeah,
once
what's up?
something gets momentum down a particular direction on a platform, it's very, very hard to step back and try to generalize it.
Yeah.
And we're not to the point we're ready to invest in uniquely Hyperledger projects very well.
Yeah. I mean, that's why the crypto live will be interesting.
Well, and I'm hoping that the private data object stuff will provide that as well.
Yeah.
I'm
That
trying to
would
get
be.
the Ari and, there's a question whether or not I can get Ari and Don to contribute Ekaden as well.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to have too.
So, but I think those both give us kind of starting points for capabilities that are kind of intentionally cross-platform from the very beginning. So,
Yeah. I mean, it also, well, I, just the crypto will be saved by the fact that crypto APIs are easy and implementing crypto is tough, right? So there's kind of this like that ratio is really what matters, right?
Yeah. And
The
by the way,
API,
I'm not convinced that crypto APIs are easy. That's a different
well,
problem.
they're easier than other things.
Yes. We've been,
Yeah.
and I say that because we've been continuing to fight with people who are doing it. For example, if you don't use PEM as your key encoding format, everybody has a little tweak that makes every other format incompatible.
Well, especially as you dive into like zero knowledge proofs and some of the selective disclosure stuff, the details about what each object means actually have some really interesting interface implications.
Yeah, and they're very unique to an implementation. There's not a lot of real standardization.
By the way, Nathan, were you contacted by the zkproofs.org?
I was not, but Jan sent us the link. I guess in May they're trying to do something.
Yeah, this is around standards.
Yeah, I was just curious what sort of IP rules and things they were going to do, because it seemed like they were just kind of striking out on their own and doing kind of their own. We'll just all get together and we'll call it a standard. So,
well, I mean, I a standard cannot be IP bound. I mean, it can be, but then it'll be less useful.
It's never stopped some organizations from trying to push it. Sorry, that was totally uncalled for.
Yeah, so
Completely appropriate and totally uncalled for.
I try not to get too involved in the standards track discussion until I know where they're trying to take it.
I was, anytime somebody starts talking standards, I just say, I'm an old IETF guy. Build it and then we'll standardize it. Don't tell me what it is before you build it. So, okay, that being said, shall we go ahead and get started? Just a reminder, we are covered by all of the lovely antitrust policies that go along with all of our work in Hyperledger. Curtail any anti-competitive practices that you have, please. Meeting notes, I've got the information up for today. Please feel free to add yourself to it. And the agenda for today was to continue the work on the ideal model pieces of it. Hart, do you want to continue to lead this portion of it and see what we can get? And I guess what I would ask you right now is to start with is, what do we need to document for this that will be sufficient for our evaluation? How should we approach the documentation pieces of it?
By that, what I mean is how will we know
we have a sufficient description?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of when we're happy with it. I don't know that there's like a clear metric for, I mean, in a usual paper, I would say when some committee accepts it, but, I don't know. Whenever people are happy with it, I guess.
Okay. So when it's useful, I guess that's it, right?
Yeah. When people can understand it clearly.
Okay.
Right. That's something that I probably shouldn't answer. It's probably a question more for everybody else when they're happy with it.
All right.
I guess, when people think it's clear and understandable.
Okay. So I have a question then very specific that Vipin brought up last time. So when you proposed this originally, you talked about all communication with the ideal system is at some level visible, or its existence is visible.
That's right? True. Yeah.
And he brought up a point about architecturally something like Corda, because it decentralizes communication. So not all is visible to all others. How do you capture that in this ideal system description?
Well, you can have sub trusted third parties and sub environments if you want. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So you're essentially creating a trusted third party for each pairwise communication then. And then there's a relationship between them. Would that be
for each maybe K-wise communication?
Mm-hmm.
This would be like a sub blockchain thing.
And given the approach with channels and Fabric, and Corda's approach, would that be an appropriate starting point for us?
I don't know if we want to start there, but I mean, it is somewhere we probably want to get eventually.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it brings up interesting points, but fundamentally, if we analyze the plane model first, right, then we can just basically use that to work on kind of the model with subparties, right? Or you know, we can just exclude people from the system.
Okay.
So, although it does bring up some interesting, interesting modeling questions. So,
interesting, you say?
Yeah, I mean, well, if you know, if we do something like this, right, it assumes that like I can't see any kind of communication between you and Mick.
I have
some router that, you know, or some, I talk to some third party or something like that, that can allow me to view or get some idea of how much you two are talking, right?
That means you covertly installed a sniffer on my network.
Not necessarily. I mean, your network, if you're trading with Mick, then you're going over the net, presumably, right?
Exactly. So I can just do...
You know, some backbone traffic analysis, for example, to see the content. So again, this sort of goes with the ideal system might be to enforce this isolation, the communication isolation. But in our analysis, we realize that all of this stuff is going over internet backbones that could potentially be tapped.
Right. But this is
again, is that how that would play out?
Yeah, but this is the benefit of actually of the ideal model is that you say, well, we're kind of ignoring these attacks, right? We're just assuming they don't happen, and we're proving security in a model that doesn't include these attacks because maybe we think they're unreasonable or something like that. So I mean that's the whole joy of this is you can pick your ideal model to either include those attacks or to not include those attacks, whichever you think is reasonable for your application. And that's just kind of, that's just a part of the thing, right? Is picking your ideal model. So I would say to start, let's just ignore that for now and just do one trusted party. But we can add that in later.
Okay. So given where we have on the text, what's next?
So we want to kind of describe, we were trying to describe the ideal model for this system, right? It's where we were last time, I think.
Yep.
So we have some trusted third party, right? So we need to delineate how exactly this system would work with this magic trusted third party, right?
Yeah.
So what's going to happen? Basically, we're going to use this magic trusted third party as essentially a bulletin board, right? Right?
Yes.
And to get around some of these traffic analysis issues, we're going to use the standard bulletin board trick of someone is going to send an encrypted message to the trusted third party. And then the trusted third party will send back an obviously encrypted message to everyone with the caveat that only certain people will be able to decrypt, right?
Yep.
And does everyone see why we're doing this?
That was basically so you can't do pairwise traffic analysis to detect why the third party is who's communicating with it, right?
But this also almost exactly simulates a blockchain post, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Right. So, and then basically it's just a matter of how we want to run this protocol, how we want to run the overall application, basically using this protocol, right?
Okay, so we started a little bit last time with the supplier and the buyer submit the contract to this trusted third party.
Right.
Submission of the contract implies that the supplier has the right to offer the contract to the factor. Supplier tells the trusted third party to send the details of the contract to one or more factors. The step is iterable so that the contract can be sent to multiple factors. And so what I hear you saying on that is, or send once with multiple parties able to decode.
Yeah, either way is fine.
Okay.
But right, the important part is that the supplier can choose the factors to send to, but the factors don't know who got picked, right?
Right.
But that's later.
No, this is the supplier picking the factors, right? The supplier is saying, I'm interested in factors A, B, or C, right?
Oh, okay.
So the point here is that, if you're factor D and you're not one of A, B, or C, you know, you shouldn't get the information, right? But also that factor A shouldn't be able to tell who else got the information. Does that make sense, Vipin? I think that's what you were going for.
Yes.
Just a question on this heart. So if we were to do this iteration once per factor, then you would leak information about the total number of factors that supplier was contacting?
Yes, you would. But I mean, you could do this like, if you wanted to stop that, and you didn't have a broadcast system, you could, I think you can just assume a broadcast system, right? You just assume the trusted authority sends something to all of the factors, right? And for some of the factors, it's an actual offer. And for some of the factors, it's just a dummy message, right?
Oh, which okay.
Which means that for the factors who can read it, you're going to probably encrypt it with their public key.
Right.
And the others, you encrypt with some junk.
Or you just send randomness. You don't even have to encrypt.
Okay.
But yeah, that's right. It's the same idea.
But to keep the sizes and everything consistent.
Yep, exactly. And this way, right, the supplier doesn't know who the factors picked. Or I'm sorry, I said that backwards. The factors don't know which factors the supplier picked, right? That's the goal of this.
They can only know whether they were picked or not.
Yes, exactly. If you want to get fancy, you can do broadcast encryption for this. And it turns out if you're going to actually do this with blockchain, you probably need broadcast encryption, but that's another story. That's why we're doing...
When you say broadcast encryption, what exactly do you mean?
So a broadcast encryption system is basically a system where I send out, I pick a policy and I create a ciphertext. And if you fit the policy, you can decrypt. And if you don't, you can't.
Will I be able to see
whether other people can decrypt? It depends on whether the system is policy hiding or not.
Yeah. In a typical, let's say in a Bitcoin blockchain where the signatures I mean, the public key is sort of exposed. The pseudonymous identifier is exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Even in this broadcast network, can you, I mean, you can't really make out.
Can't make out what?
Well, if you do the broadcast, you can't really make out because you're basically, you can't make out who was able to decrypt and who was not able to decrypt.
Right. So the ideal protocol for broadcast encryption, yes, you want this kind of policy anonymity. But sometimes you have to, there are some broadcast encryption schemes for which you have to reveal information that reveals the policy. So you basically reveal who gets to decrypt. For some you don't though, right? If you have a small number of factors, right? Like if I have just five factors, right? I can do a very simple protocol where I encrypt to each of the factors I encrypt to the factors that I want to send to, add randomness for those that I don't, and just randomize the order, right? And so each factor tries to decrypt all of the ciphertexts one by one. And if it can, then it gets an offer. And if it doesn't, it doesn't, right? So that's a very simple and inefficient protocol for doing this, right? If you want a more powerful protocol, they exist, but they require a lot of math. Broadcast encryption starts to get pretty complicated. So, but we'll get to that later. Are we okay with this first stage? So basically how the supplier,
Are you able to see the text that I'm writing?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just, so if I put something stupid in there, just let me know. But
okay. It looks good so far.
Shouldn't it be creates a secure covert channel? I don't know.
What should be a secure channel or a covert channel?
This approach creates a secure channel from the supplier to the factors that does not.
It's not really covert, right? Because everyone can see what's going on.
They can see that communication is existing.
Right. And that means it's not covert, right? A covert channel is where I can't see communication is going. So.
But isn't this whole idea of using using this broadcast mechanism to conceal whether communication is going on between specific parties?
Yes, well, we're doing that by talking to everybody.
Okay, so it's not covert in that sense.
Yeah, I guess it's not covert because they're...
You're revealing that the supplier needs financing. That is definitely revealing.
Yeah, exactly. People see that there is some message going, but they're not sure, you know, who it's going to, right? So it's like there is a notification that someone somewhere is sending a message. If you had a true covert channel, that wouldn't happen, right? Only the two parties involved would know. It's like if the mail truck doesn't go out because there's no mail, or if it does go out, you know, someone's getting a letter.
Yeah.
So.
So it doesn't necessarily imply soliciting financing, but it does imply that there's,
right,
that the supplier is initiating some request, whatever, yes, that request is.
And again,
okay, now the other implication for that is that, going back in the submission of the contract, if the supplier and the buyer submit the contract, then there's some information that's exposed about the contract between the supplier and the buyer. Is that correct?
Well, that has to be, I mean, sorry, who's seeing the information?
Well, if the supplier and the buyer submit it to the trusted third party, then the existence, the fact that they're communicating something to the TCP.
Yes, that does reveal
some information. Yes. Right? Okay. And the other thing is it because our contact with the factors results in this broadcast message. By looking at the sequence of messages, you could know that we're soliciting financing because it's a very different protocol.
Then what? Really?
Then simply submitting the supplier and the buyer. So we have two. We have two transactions, right?
We don't have to make it a different protocol, right? We can make a submitting to the. We can make them look the same, right? If we want, we can just.
Okay. So anytime anyone sends a message to the trusted third party, it broadcasts something.
Well, I mean, it depends on the security we want, right? We're defining the ideal model. So we can basically, obviously there's generally a trade-off between efficiency and security, right? So we can add kind of as many dummy messages or as much padding as we want at the cost of efficiency to get more security. So I was going to comment on this. Like, I'm just kind of picking an ideal model. If it's not the right one.
Well, yeah, we can fix it.
And the people who are more familiar with this use case should jump in and tell me.
Well, and the reason why I'm going back on that is your observation before about the bulletin board approach, where somebody sends something in and that trusted third party broadcasts everything out. That is very blockchain-ish.
Yes.
Right. So if my initial transaction, if the supplier wants to submit a contract that exists between the supplier and the buyer, that goes in as essentially a transaction. The changed state of the ledger then is broadcast out by a typical blockchain system in that anybody can look at it. Mm-hmm. So I was simply suggesting that, we can make those essentially indistinguishable, that the trusted third party responds to the submission of the contract by broadcasting some set of junk messages, right?
Yes.
So we keep that model that this looks like a blockchain and we're submitting a transaction to it. It changes state and that state's broadcast out to everyone.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. And if we're formally defining this, we would write this up as a protocol, right? And then we would just use this in a black box manner, right? This would be like F bulletin board, right? And we could analyze the guarantees of F bulletin board and then kind of, go from there.
I can't hear people with heart dropped off.
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
He's waiting for me to type, I think.
Yeah, I'm watching Mick type. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Watching paint dry, watching Mick type.
Hey, somebody else could actually type in here and that would make me quite happy too.
I know. I'm sorry.
Mick, you better get back on Mavis Beacon and ramp up those words per minute.
Maybe you could hum like Glenn Gould while you're playing the piano.
Bum. No, you really don't want me to do that. Especially not this early on a Friday morning.
Oh, dear. So the next question while Mick types is, what do we want to happen next, right? If one factor posts back on the blockchain, right, then that reveals something, right?
What were you saying?
If one factor posts back, right, that reveals something, right?
Yes.
Uh, So in an ideal protocol, right, we would want, well, in the ideal protocol I had in my head, maybe this is wrong, maybe we don't need this, all of the factors either respond back with either an offer to the supplier or junk, right?
Yeah, but there would be timing attacks on that unless you randomize the junk. Because a factor who's really considering a bid would spend a different amount of time.
Sure. I mean, you could have some kind of timing system in there, right?
Well, as long as we are discussing the ideal system, yes.
Yeah. But the idea we want to make is that, you know, basically the someone watching the traffic, right, shouldn't be able to tell which factors are replying to a certain supplier, right? That's what we want to get across in this instance.
And then we, after constructing this ideal model, then you start relaxing some of those constraints. Is that what is going to happen?
No.
Are we just basically describe how you would either build the ideal system or how existing systems would attempt to achieve the properties in the ideal system?
Basically, what we show is we show that we have a blockchain, right? And what we're going to show is that any adversary that can attack the blockchain, right, or do something on the blockchain, can also do the same thing on the ideal system. So basically what we want to show, if there's an attack on our blockchain, then there's also an attack on our ideal system. Does that make sense, Vipin?
Okay.
And the idea is, this helps us a lot because the ideal system is really easy to analyze, right? Our protocols are pretty simple. It's exactly, you know, it's very easy to see what is learned by who, right? So if you're an adversary and you can learn some information in the real system, then you can also learn it in the ideal system. That's the key point. And this will obviously be, you know, modulo some cryptographic assumptions, but, you know, that's okay, right? We believe in those anyway. So, does that make sense?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I may have to drop off in a minute.
That's okay. At some point, though, it would be good, because I don't understand the use case as well as you, if you can just make sure, if we go through and we look at the ideal model, and we just
I'll make some comments.
Yeah, we just make sure that that is appropriate, right? It does give you enough security for what you're trying to solve. That's kind of the key point.
Yes. All right, guys, I'm sorry. I have to.
No worries.
Thanks, Vipin. Okay, so who do we have left? Nathan, are you still on?
Yes, I'm still on.
Okay, so I have Nathan and Stan. All right. So continuing on to work on the response. The simple version of this that looks like, again, that looks very blockchain-ish, is that the factors submit a message to a trusted third party, which results in our standard broadcast response, which only the supplier can interpret. Is that right?
Yes, I think so. right? So the factors respond with an offer, right? Fundamentally, there are three steps in the protocol, right? The supplier issues a request. The factors respond with an answer, and then the supplier confirms, right? Is that correct?
Yep. And there'll be a confirmation in a minute, but...
Yeah, so well, it's the three stages. And fundamentally, kind of how much privacy we want at each step is how we define the ideal model. Right? Or rather, you know. How much communication reveals?
Yeah, so let me get this down, and then I had a couple of questions for each bit. Broadcast messages that only the supplier can interpret. Okay, so that again keeps our sort of notion of a bulletin board. One sends in, the TPP broadcasts out to all. Okay, so now this opens doors for correlation, right?
Yes.
Oops, the bits. All right. So, what would be a technique in this ideal system for avoiding that correlation? Okay, all efficiency concerns aside, everybody just broadcasts continuously. Everybody has a time slot in which they can send something. They always send something, right?
Right. So that would work,
but it would not be useful for most implementations.
That's the most extreme, right? Dream is kind of the everybody sends once to the people they want, and we have like very good traffic analysis that can be done. So the question I was going to ask is basically this is determined by the application, right? What are the actual requirements of the system?
Well, and this is where we also have several options, right? Because not everyone has to communicate with everyone else point to point. They can also communicate through intermediaries, and you can build all the way up to like a mixed network, or you can just create enough plausible deniability and unpredictability about the actual destination of the traffic that it makes the statistical analysis difficult.
Well, the trusted third party is basically already doing all that, right?
Not just incoming messages, though.
We can have it do that. It is, because if a message goes in, right, to the trusted third party, only the trusted third party knows where it should go out.
But the fact that it came in, and it's the correlation of the incoming messages that's the problem.
Yes.
Yeah, in an Indy's system, we use the fact you have identity agents at the edge for key management, but you also have identity agents in the cloud for availability, give you kind of a network that you can use for this. Because if everybody's sending traffic through kind of what you would think of as a router agent, you don't know point to point who's talking to whom or about what subject.
So my thought on this was that, so I was assuming a semi-permissioned network where the factors are authenticated, but the suppliers and buyers aren't necessarily. Right? And in this case, the suppliers can do what you said and submit anonymously or however they want, and with, credentials that are anonymized. Does that seem reasonable?
So why do you think the suppliers don't need to be the identified?
Well, they do, but only to the people they want. So basically, if I'm a supplier, I can create a random, I'm encrypting to the factors, right? I'm initiating the conversation, right?
Right.
So I don't have to identify myself to people that I don't want to be identified to, right?
The same goes for the factors.
No. So the factors, the suppliers need to know the factors in advance, right? Because they're picking factors. Or maybe they don't. Maybe you could have some kind of broadcast where, you know, you submit to all factors or something like that, right? But even then, right, how do I know you're a factor, right?
So my understanding was that, as Vipin kept pointing out, that the suppliers will know all the factors. Like, they will know for whom they want to, who they want to see submitting the bids.
Yeah, that's what I assumed too, right? So therefore, their identities are, in some sense, are public, right?
Yes, yeah.
So that means it's harder for them to stay anonymous.
Because it's initiated by the supplier.
Right, so the suppliers initiate
the destination.
Okay, exactly.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So the supplier, it's much easier to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But again, relying on mixed nets is a risky business.
In terms of authentication on the network, is it okay that you talked about how some would be authenticated and some would not be authenticated, but there's also an intermediate idea here, and that is that they're pseudonymously identified or pseudonymously authenticated, meaning they're presenting a key that allows authentication, but only within the context of the bid.
The factors or the suppliers?
I'm tangling up the terminology here.
So the supplier is the one that's initiating the offer, and the factors are the bidders.
Yeah.
On that.
But in this case, it wouldn't matter whether either party could allow them to, or could use a pseudonymous identifier just for the context of the bid process.
Well, the problem is the supplier needs to know the factor identity, right? Because it's a core feature that the supplier submits only to factors that it wants to. So this means that the factor has to have some out-of-band identity that the supplier can, you know, basically include or pick.
Right. You have to have some mechanism for bootstrapping that pseudonymous identifier on both sides, and that creates a correlation point.
So I'm just kind of assuming that this – no, but the factor has to have like an actual – I mean, it has to be – we have to basically assume it's identified. Right, because all of the suppliers have to know how to get or how to include a certain factor in their transactions, right?
So they have to have some public way or public identifier or some public location that they can then
someone can
show up and say, "Hey, I want you to be part of this bid," and then they could negotiate off at that point to a pseudonymous identifier such that only the supplier knows who the factor is.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you can do some kind of delegatable tricks, right? But the suppliers have to be able to find the factors. And that means that, the factors can find the other factors.
Right, but this is one of the steps you do to try to anonymize the traffic later on, is if you can make it so that the introduction step is not observable by the outside, then subsequent traffic isn't necessarily correlated
you have to be really careful with this, but
right, because the physical network topology can still out you.
Yeah, and this is why it's difficult to do this sort of thing without broadcasting. Right, because if, if I'm talking to Mick and I'm talking to Stan online, right, my transaction rate might be closer, you know, might be higher with Mick because he's in Oregon and Stan is in Chicago.
Right. A river of public data that everyone can just, you know, dip in and pluck out what they want without anyone noticing works better for that.
Yeah.
Which is essentially everyone broadcasts everything to everything else in a certain time slot or whatever. Yeah.
Well, we're cheating a little bit from that, right? Because we're assuming the supplier can stay somewhat pseudonym, we're assuming the supplier can stay somewhat anonymous.
Well, or at least somewhat anonymous in terms of the public traffic, right? Obviously, yeah. They're going to correlate and add attributes when they talk to the people who are requesting a bid.
Right.
But
we assume their identities can be hidden. But this is just one of the ideal models. I mean.
Hey, question. So do they need to prove that they're a supplier?
They might, but like we presume, supplier. Right? So our model is the supplier is broadcasting, or the trusted third party or the supplier, somebody is sending an encrypted message with relevant information to the good factors that they want to use and junk to everybody else. So in this encrypted message, they can have a proof that they're a supplier, right? That should have all of the information necessary to make a contract, right?
So, Hart, can I just challenge one thing? So,
sure.
We're going down the path of, and a lot of this complexity is because of a requirement that we believe we have to preserve the anonymity of the participants. This is something we should check with, well, and in particular, Stan Yu and Vipin. Is it the anonymity of the participants that's important? Or is it the details of the interaction between those participants that needs to be hidden?
Both. So it's not the identity of, well, for the financial case, and I feel it's going to be kind of similar here, that basically the seller, the originator, is their identity is okay to reveal. But the factors should not know about each other.
Right. Well, hang on a second. So there's a big difference between, and I'm differentiating between, I know the endpoint, I know all of the endpoints, right? And one of the things Vipin kept saying was that there is this existing relationship between suppliers and factors. That's very different from saying that in the context of a particular offer, the factor should not know that the other factors are participating in this offer. That is, there's a difference between saying no factor should know whether or not they have received a bid, whether or not some other factors received a bid. That's very different than saying, I know that you work for blah, and I picked you because of that.
I'm not sure I see you.
There's a context for a particular offer, right? It's a set of identities that has been targeted for this offer.
Right.
Okay. All of those who are in that set can respond with a bid. I can preserve the anonymity, I can preserve the confidentiality of the membership of that set separately from preserving the confidentiality of the identities of those who are in the set. And what I heard Vipin say was that it's the set that matters, not the individuals in the set.
I see.
I'm asking this as a clarification question, you know, which do we need to do? Because we're spending an awful lot of time about preserving the anonymity of the individual identities rather than focusing on preserving the confidentiality of the set and the membership of the set.
Yeah. This is probably my fault because I'm just kind of going off on a model that I thought was
well,
right. And I could be totally wrong.
There's no fault here, cart. I'm just trying to get clarity because I'm not sure, but what we've made the problem much harder than it needs to be.
Well, and you really do have to do both to a certain extent. But if you're doing everything as point-to-point communications and you're not relying on having a common river of information, hiding the membership in the set is less difficult. If you're trying to do a pooled kind of stream of information, then the fact that you're dipping into that stream of information may reveal your membership in the set. Is that what you're referring to, Mick, or is there something broader?
Yes. No, that's exactly... So I know, Nathan, I know you. I know some things about you. But I don't know what transactions you're participating in. Please, not, I hope, well, I don't know how many Bitcoins you own. How's that? Right? And I don't know about the messages that you interact with Hart, even though I know both of you. So there's a difference between, you know, the fact that we have these verifiable identities from the uniqueness of the set of individuals over which communication occurs.
Right. And the other piece here that's really can simplify things is if you don't care about proving that something does not exist, then having it in one centralized information stream is less relevant. Because we can anchor the things we do need to prove that exist. Proving that something is not part of the stream is actually much, much more difficult. Because like you said, we could talk about things out of band.
Right. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail.
No. I mean, that's a perfectly good point. We need to, you know, in many of these systems, like picking the ideal model is often the hard problem, right? So it's picking basically what security you need that's both achievable and good enough. So this is the hard problem in many of these cases.
Well, and it's okay. I find it interesting that just trying to come up with the ideal model actually helps refine the requirements.
Well, I mean, it should be
it's both, it's back and forth, obviously, but
I mean, that's the point, right? It's much harder to talk about requirements when you're talking about the real model, right? Because they're not immediately obvious. But when you talk about the ideal model, it's generally very clear what you're getting. And that's why people do this kind of proof.
Actually, an interesting distinction, because in like some of the financial cases, there are combinations of these. Like you can do it one way or the other, and sometimes one leads to another.
Okay. So how do we capture the discussions that you guys were having earlier about identity? Nathan, can I turn the pen over to you for a second?
Yeah, should we just add it into kind of the stream of the narrative here, or what are you thinking?
I feel better about the sort of content that we've created before. Right now I'm just saying, let's just throw stuff in here, we'll actually figure out how to make it into a concrete flow later. So some of this looks like note-taking and some of it looks like text editing. And the bottom is much more note-taking than text editing. So I guess my question is, can you turn my notes into something that looks like text? Whether it's now or later is fine.
Anonymous mink.
Nathan, how do you feel about being a mink? Actually, it's not really that anonymous because it's correlated, right?
Yeah.
Time-based information streams are hard.
Yeah. That is true.
All right, I need to take off a little early because I got to walk across campus.
Okay. No worries.
I find the discussions the last couple of weeks focused on this to be very helpful.
Yeah, that's good.
And enlightening. So I'd suggest, if everybody's okay with it, I suggest we continue moving down this path.
Yeah, sounds good.
And on that note, I will talk to y'all on Rocket Chat and other places later.
Yep. We should probably just close the meeting.
Yep.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to y'all later.
Talk to y'all later.
Thanks. Bye.